Hello and a warm welcome to the Open Science Radio. This is the very first English episode that we're doing. And because we are very kind of nervous, we just decided that we would invite a guest that we already had on the show. So we have again with us Aidan.
Hi.
And of course, Conrad.
Hello.
And it's our very pleasure to have another guest from far away, Natasha.
Hi, everyone.
And, well, after the last recording, we kind of had the feeling that we might have not touched every aspect in a decent way, or maybe we have, but we kind of felt that we should do this episode again in English. And the episode about unseminars and unconferences is probably a very promising topic to do so, because Aidan is also an English-speaking guy. And we can, by introducing Natasha to this episode as well, maybe also add some more information and touch upon other aspects of the unseminar.
Yeah, actually, you know, I talked to some people about this, and they were English speaking. So, for example, a PhD student in my lab, and she said, "Oh, what a pity! I would love to listen to this." And she's said just English speaking. So, I think we will broaden our audience with this, and I think this is a brilliant starting point to kind of keep this common ground that we have already, due to the fact that we have already a German episode of this, but we might even extend it topic wise. So we're really looking forward to this now.
Right. To touch upon one more aspect before we get started, thanks for the comments to the last episode, be it on in the comment section in the blog, or be it via Twitter or mail. Thanks a lot. And towards your questions that you have posted, we will find some answers probably in the next episode, so that we can get started right on now. And maybe we should get started by giving Natasha a bit of room to introduce herself.
Yes, okay. So my name is Natasha, and I'm currently a research fellow and a lecturer at the University of Cape Town, which is in South Africa. My current research focus is specifically on HIV, which includes both evolutionary analysis and protein modeling. But my background includes a broader bioinformatics master's degree and also a cross-disciplinary undergraduate life sciences degree.
All right. And maybe, Aidan, you can also give us quickly an overview of what you're doing right now.
So at the moment, I work at the EMBL, European Molecular Biology Laboratory, at the mothership, one of the locations of the lab in Heidelberg in Germany. My position there is as senior project manager for bioinformatics, not, as some of my friends insist on calling it, senior project manager. Yeah, so, still makes me laugh. And there my work focuses mostly on community building things, working with groups, both within our institute but also outside, to sort of build collaborations and help people find common goals that they want to work on with together and make stuff happen. That's mostly focused on bioinformatics, so lots on training as well.
Sounds good. And the question is, why do we have you guys here? And it is very easy. You are kind of the specialist for unseminars and conferences in the bioinformatics world, I would say. So maybe Aidan, you can quickly explain how this happened, or how you got into the topic of unconferences, unseminars, and all these, let's say, informal types of gatherings.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit uncomfortable. It's the gift that keeps on giving, the un-four syllable. I'm a little bit uncomfortable describing myself as an expert, but in that,
you are.
It's certainly something I've done reasonably often and enjoy and believe is a really very powerful way of promoting collaboration and community building, and also enjoyment and fun and pleasure and so on. Let me see. What was the question?
How did you start?
Yes,
exactly. How did it start?
So I have this job where one of the aims of it is to try and build community within our internal bioinformatics community at EMBL in Heidelberg, but also we're also interested in getting to know and working and collaborating, and indeed building community with people who are doing bioinformatics close to near us in Heidelberg and around. And so I was looking to try and find something to do to bring us all together, and just by default was going to go for the, let's call it classic, someone gives a research talk and we drink a beer while listening and then go to the pub. Seemed to me like the obvious thing to do. but I would say I had the luck of having a bioinformatician friend whose partner, who's in marketing and was at the time working for EMBO, European Molecular Biology Organization, which is very distinct and different, but actually just next door to us at EMBL. And she was, she had the job of, or part of her job involved trying to find ways of making EMBO's big meeting. So EMBO is a life science organization, promotes a whole bunch of activities linked to life sciences across Europe. And so her job was to, she was involved in organizing sessions for the EMBO meeting, so a big life science conference that takes place each year in Europe. And she wanted to try and explore alternative meeting formats. Maybe was thinking of trying out flash talks or, I don't know, other kinds of things that you can do with a group that are different from sitting and listening to someone in a dark room for half an hour. And so at the very same time that I was about to start trying to organize events for local bioinformaticians in Heidelberg, Matt and Katja got in touch with me and said, not even knowing that I was planning to do that, to ask if I would be interested in using bioinformatics as a context to play around with alternative meeting formats. And so the thought was perhaps obvious. Why don't we try a local community building set of events here in Heidelberg that are aiming to explore alternative formats, different ways of getting people talking to each other. And so, and that's right. Although another member of the EMBL community, Sonia Furtado, had at the time recently been to something called an unconference, a relatively famous one called Science Online, takes place in the States. And she'd been there, and so she'd been at a whole 2-3 day event which was focused on these kinds of approaches, and we talked also with her. And so just came up the idea of trying locally meetings that have some of these alternative formats. And we enjoyed doing them and have done quite a lot of them. And I'm not going to say become obsessed, but I I've become very, impressed by the power that I see that they have to open up participation in communities in general and also in science. And there's, for me, the link to open science. It's the way we run these events is to try and make them as open as possible, to make them as accessible to anyone who has any interest and is prepared to play by normal social mores, being respectful to each other and so on. When we organize our events, everyone is welcome to join us in organizing them. Everyone is welcome to come and join the events. We make all our minutes of our meetings and agendas open for everyone to see on the web and so on. And I just love watching how being so open with people and treating them with the respect that I think is partly linked to this kind of openness, you get people to be really enthusiastic to do things with you, to collaborate, to make things happen that otherwise would not have been happening, and which are at the same time the things they really want to have happen. I'm answering this question really long-windedly, if that's a word, so I'm going to stop now. I may have gone off track.
This is exactly how we like it, you know. No, this is really cool. Maybe, you know, I think I did a mistake, because the same mistake I did in the German version of this, I haven't asked you guys what is actually an unseminar, an unconference. Maybe we should spend at least some minutes on the details of what this actually means and how this can be implemented. Aidan, would you like to spend some words on this, and then maybe Natasha can add something?
Sure. So I guess we can perhaps take an example of the first unconference session that both Natasha and I took part in. I've had the pleasure of knowing Natasha in Morocco in 2013, something like that, where I was doing some teaching and she was one of the people who was participating in the course. We met then again at the ISMB ECCB, which is a big worldwide bioinformatics conference that was then in Berlin later that same year. And as part of that, I organized a Birds of a Feather session about using unconferences in bioinformatics. And so for that relatively short session, I think it was an hour and a half, which Conrad was also a participant in.
Disclaimer.
we began with an icebreaking activity where people had a chance in relatively small groups to get to know each other, or maybe we did some speed dating, something like that. Then with some very quickly prepared, rough looking presentations from me introducing the idea of an unseminar, we then broke off into small group discussions where people chose which topics they would most like to discuss with each other. So it's all about the participants having the power and the opportunity to control both the content and the structure of the way that the session is running, and to be also involved in a sort of a very active way in what's happening. There's, you know, the average participant has a great deal more opportunity to influence the conversations and the discussions that have in the room, that take place in the room. If you organize it in a way where everyone there can choose which topics they talk about, they can choose the groups that they want to discuss those topics in, and so on. And I think that's pretty much what we did in that hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And although I don't trust my memory for that kind of thing very much anymore, and I'm more sort of guessing that that's probably what happened, actually, mm-hmm. if I'm honest.
Yep. It's a good example how to run this. Okay, Natasha, would you extend this, or did you do something like this as well in this range, or what kind of events did you participate? Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can just add in terms of the Birds of a Feather session mm-hmm. that Aidan organized, it really was nice to see when people were divided into smaller groups how diverse the topics and the range of conversations were, where people weren't driven in a certain direction. And it also was one of the sessions where I actually met most of the people that I met at the conference that I hadn't known before the conference. So for me, it showed its worth at that event specifically.
Mm-hmm. And one has to mention, this kind of event ended up in a paper, right?
Well, in fact, quite specifically, that event was the seed for the 10 Simple Rules for Organizing an Unconference. I think that's the title of a paper that we've just, Conrad, Natasha and I are all co-authors on, and that was published in PLOS Computational Biology last week, I think.
Yep. And this sounds very much like this is just a PR pitch for everything. Mm. So this was just, you know, we put these things now together, but this was not planned to have the podcast and the second podcast just right after or just before the paper came out. This was just a coincidence. We knew that the paper comes out at some point, but managing all this or putting these dates together it's a coincidence. Let's call it like this. But it fits very nicely. Now people can listen to the podcast and read the paper immediately. And I think this is a very nice way of having a different view at the paper and going into details maybe about this as well.
By thinking about the paper, I think it's a nice mm-hmm. way of highlighting, kind of illustrating ideas of community building and how that links into unconferences. Because as I said, these days I spend most of my time doing this community building work, and there's a wonderful book that if people are interested in that kind of thing, they can read more about it, called The Art of Community by John O'Bacon. And there he
wrote this.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Ubuntu guy.
Yeah, exactly. The Ubuntu guy, the yeah. John O'Bacon. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he has I really like his sort of operational definition of community, which is something like a group of people who have shared interests, goals, and values, and who also have the desire to collaborate, so a collaborative spirit. So they want to make things happen and do make them happen together. And that's what happened at this unconference session. So we met together. We had a bunch of people who had shared interests and values and goals, an interest in being open and interested in exploring alternative formats, a shared interest in bioinformatics. And also, there was a perception that writing an article together, so doing something collaboratively together, would be a nice way, a nice sort of goal that we, many of us, could attach ourselves to. Particularly, I think, for younger, more junior scientists, it's a nice opportunity to publish an article together with potentially more senior people, to have a context in which to interact, to build those strong relationships that are what like a community depends on to function happily and healthily. The collaboration that comes out of the shared interests and goals and values and has this very nice tangible output in terms of the paper. I think that linking that unconference session to the paper is a nice way of highlighting how a meeting that promotes interaction like that, that helps people to get to know each other better, that helps focus very specifically on the interests and needs of the group of people who are there, and if it can be done in a way that encourages people to want to collaborate with each other, and in that case it clearly did, then you can produce nice things together, things that hopefully have value both to the wider community, the people who were not there in the meeting who can now read the paper, but also I got to know people better as a result of working on and collaborating with them on that article. Yeah. I'm not quite in with this being interviewed thing, am I? It's like, anyway, sorry, my voice. What can I say?
It's brilliant. Don't worry.
Not at all. In terms of the paper, for me specifically, I think it would be at a next conference, I would go and seek out the other authors of the paper and introduce myself again and just say, so it's a way of continuing the networking, even though you may have met them in passing. It's a way of feeling that you are slightly attached to a smaller community of people who want to work together. And in that way, it encourages further interaction and further introduction to different people at these kind of conferences.
That's very good. I think we should do a study maybe 5 years after that. If there are any other kind of projects started based on this new connections, this would be interesting to see.
Absolutely.
Natasha, you have also a local group, right? I mean, Aidan mentioned this, that they have this in Heidelberg, and you're running this in Cape Town as well, right? So maybe
yes.
You can explain this a little bit, how you're approaching this, or what you guys are doing down there.
So I think for the Cape and seminars in bioinformatics, so we've called ourselves the Cub Hub, we are in a good position to follow what the guys in Heidelberg have done. So it's really nice to have seen that a concept like this can work, and also to see the different topics that have worked in this kind of environment. And the other thing that is great about Cape Town or the Western Cape is that three of the major universities are located quite close together. So bioinformaticians from three different universities can get together in one location to discuss different topics and to learn from each other. So I think that these aspects have actually helped the community and helped us all stick together and try and build the network. And it's definitely encouraged interaction. It's encouraged people to think differently about their work and about broadening their research topics. So in that sense, it's definitely been a great experience for myself. So we only started at the beginning of last year, and we've managed to run 4 events. The first one was specifically just on networking, so getting people to talk to each other. And then we've had a couple on trying to use alternative educational tools or to describe bioinformatics to a layperson or to someone who might not understand what it's about. And then we've had a great interaction with the guys in Heidelberg. So we've had an intercontinental hub event. And Aidan, maybe you want to actually talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, that was fun, quite a challenge. We So together with Natasha and several other people, we were doing an EMBO-funded, there's EMBO again, EMBO-funded practical course that we were teaching in Cape Town, in the University of Cape Town. Natasha was one of the trainers, as was I. And as part of that, we thought, well, why don't we try and linking up these two communities, the people who are in Heidelberg and in Hub, and Cape Cub people, and in addition, also the trainers and the trainees associated with this practical course, a chance to put people in touch with each other and explore what it's like doing that over the interweb, over a really huge continent, and then a bit more. It was really quite an experience flying down from Europe, and it's like, oh, we're in Kenya, we're kind of nearly there yet. No. It's quite a long way still to go. Amazing place, amazing trip. Mm-hmm. So we tried several of the things we've done before in previous hubs. We tried speed dating and also sort of a show and tell session, and we tried to do that using multiple laptops in both locations so that we could set up people in Cape Town and Heidelberg to chat with each other. And it didn't always work technically. To be honest, that was probably my most stressful unseminar, because I spent all the time running between computers trying to convince browsers to talk to each other. And it's like, I never was very techie, and I'm less techie than I used to be. And that was a lot of pressing like restart and so on. But the feedback we had from the people who had taken part of it was that they enjoyed themselves, and it was sometimes I did take a moment out in clicking refresh on browsers to watch and listen to people chatting to each other. And yeah, there's something still for me, even just what we're doing here at the moment, vaguely awesome, completely awesome about being able to have these links and interactions or whatever across the continents. And it was nice to see others experiencing that excitement as well. We're so used to watching films and broadcasts from halfway across the world on TV, but when you're actually in it, when you're actually engaged in it and talking to people like this, it's really exciting. So that was, we learned a lot. I learned a lot about what I would want to do if I were to try that again. And I think we're kind of probably the next Hub Cup meeting is going to be an attempt to try and trying to link up the two locations again, but with a more specific purpose next time. I learned a lot.
Yeah, a bit of a more structure.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me, there's going to be a cat moment here. I'm just going to have to go and do something with my cat. I'm going to be back in about 30 seconds. Sorry.
Excellent. So meanwhile, we can ask Natasha. How long was this session, this unseminar, this Hub Cup interaction?
Interaction. So generally, we try not to have it for more than 2 hours, because people are committing time to it and they have other things to do. The interesting thing that I took from that experience was that people needed a lot of coercing to start a conversation with someone in Germany. So the people down in Cape Town were a little bit shy, a little bit hesitant. English isn't always their first language. They weren't sure how it was going to work. But once they sat down and spoke to the person across the continent, there was no stopping it. There was no getting them away from the conversation. So we actually had to break up some of these speed dating sessions to give other people opportunity to interact. And that was some of the feedback as well. I mean, they would have wanted a longer session to chat to people. So in that sense, it was about 2 to 2.5 hours, the entire seminar event. And I think people will be very excited to do this again.
Mm-hmm. Even despite these technical difficulties, it's, I guess, worth a lot, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. So Aiden and Holger were absolutely brilliant on this side, running around and making sure everything was working and there were enough computers for people to sit at. Some of the other trainers were also really good at encouraging people to have a conversation. So I think for the participants on Cape Town side, they didn't necessarily even notice some of the glitches and some of the refreshing that happened in the background. So in that sense, having organizers that are so efficient is definitely a benefit.
Okay. Matthias, do you have any questions regarding this combined one? Otherwise, I would continue.
I just was thinking about, because I read that you were using Appirin as a platform to get this video conversation started. And I was just thinking about, would it actually work without imagery?
It's more fun. And it really does, it really adds... I mean, I think if you can have it and it's easy and doesn't cause you any technical problems, then I would always go for it. Or usually go for
it. It's also, I think because we did a couple of group interactions, so where people had split earphones, so they were, say, two or three people on the one side and another couple on Cape Town side. And in that sense, it's really nice because you can see the people on the other side turn to each other and have a conversation with each other. And then they can see you trying to join the conversation and to add their opinions. So in that sense, I think it was very good.
Okay.
I think the technology is improving in this direction, right? I mean, all these WebRTC-based systems are coming up now. I thought it's happening already last year, but it didn't. But I guess this year we really will see a explosion of different services using this, for example, Firefox Hello and these kind of things. So I think you might have less stress in the near future regarding this, hopefully.
I had a stressful Appirin experience today, and as a result of it, I went back to the computer and have worked out how to switch on Firefox Hello. And I don't yet know how well that's going to work, but I'm curious to see if that works a bit better for us.
Okay. I think we jumped, and this was again my mistake. We jumped directly into the toughest hardcore experience, I guess. Maybe you should start and go back. And I'm really sorry for this hopping around here. Maybe you should start by having a look at the hub itself. So, how many people are you in Heidelberg joining these meetings regularly? And how do you organize this? What is the length of this? How do you communicate? How do you keep the community together? These are now a lot of questions for you, Aidan, and I'm pretty sure you can do this in one go.
Oh, thank you, Conrad. righty. In the words of Ace Ventura. so we meet every 6 to 8 weeks, I think. Since the beginning of 2012, I think we've had 24, 25 meetings, of which 16 have been unseminars, and then we call them hub 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but then we sometimes have 1.5 or 2.5 in the middle for either more social things like barbecues or visits to the Christmas market, or more meta meetings. So we had a meeting which is, that was in June last year, trying to organize hub as a legal entity, which we are interested in doing for reasons of limiting liability and allowing us to have a bank account and also allowing us to apply for money, so also of interest. So 16 full unseminars and then nine other things in between, which were focused on different kinds of things. We usually, I'd say on average, we have maybe 25 people. Maybe 20, 25. Mm-hmm. We've gone up to, I think we had more than 80 in last year in March. So there's a pretty awesome meeting that I'm very happy to do publicity for called VisB. So this is Visualization in Biology conference, which is coordinated by Jim Proctor and Sean O'Donoghue, and it's a great meeting. I really enjoy it, and I don't usually enjoy conferences, but I enjoy this one a lot. And so we did a tie-in with them. So we told them we were going to do the unseminar, and they told their meeting participants that we were going to do the unseminar. It was the night before the conference began, and we had maybe 70 people who were coming to the conference also joined us that evening. That's the biggest one we've done so far. And I mean, if you want, I can give you a quick description of what happened there. Would that be
all right? Yes, sure.
So that was awesome. To give an idea that it can scale to maybe 80, 90 people, we had so the focus was on visualization. So for an icebreaker, we played Pictionary. So this is when you just use drawing to explain to people what your project was. So in groups of three, people broke up and they played this together as a way of relaxing and also getting to know each other a bit better, but also focusing on visualization. Then we had, so normally we don't have so many presentations, but this time we went for, I think it was maybe maximum 10 minutes, no less. I think the first presentation was from Francis Rowland, the lead UX designer at the Emble EBI, and he introduced everyone to sketchnoting, which is basically taking notes from a talk using pictures and words. So obviously there's a link to visualization there. And so Francis introduced sketchnoting in about 5 to 10 minutes. Then we wanted to have an opportunity for people to try out this visual drawing, sketchy way of taking notes. So we had two more talks from two different designers. We had someone called Tom Grace, who's an excellent young type designer. He designs fonts and typefaces in Heidelberg. And he talked about typeface selection and linked it to examples of the way that we use typefaces in biology and biological data. And so while people were listening to that, they were trying out their sketch notes. And then we had Sandra Kahl from Embo, who works on helping people design the figures and redesign figures for use in articles published by Embo in their journals. Mm-hmm. And so she talked about how, you know, what you can do about it to produce a good figure for these articles. And then, so people had then built, had made their sketch notes during these two talks. We had a session with Francis, where people had compared the sketch notes they'd made and then talked with Francis and each other about what, you know, how useful this had been and, compared notes, literally. And then we led a small group activity where people had either brought along their own figures that they wanted to try and improve, or we gave them some examples of figures that could be improved. And so in groups of 4 or 5, people sat with these and tried to improve the figures, while the three designers that we had along, Francis, Tom, and Sandra, went around giving their sort of tips and advice about what was going on. I think we then had just a short competition, or no, it was even just a raffle, basically, to Francis had brought along some books that he was part of about sketchnoting. We gave them out to people, and then we went to the pub. So it was about small group activities, things that brought people together, were talking to each other, were engaging with each other on topics that were the common interest, so visualization in biology. And yeah, it was lovely. I mean, it was I really enjoyed it. And I kind of, it's kind of uncanny how often I think, maybe Visby is coming up soon. And I'm like, no, it's another year away. So I hope we get to try another one of these joint unseminars with that group, because it was really nice to be helping the Visby people build some community, build some connections between the people just who were at that meeting, but allow the cross-fertilization to people who maybe couldn't afford or couldn't justify going to that meeting. They also had a chance to meet up with these people. And
all right. I mean, the point is that you somehow, I mean, this was a very seldom or rare coincidence that many people came together, right? And still you were able to manage this. Is this, let's say, as an organizer, was this tricky for you, or was this harder than usual?
It was. I was relatively stressed, I have to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is something I didn't even, shame on me, I didn't talk about this yet. So these things work and go so well because there's an awesome group of people who are really committed to making them work. I'm mm-hmm. one of them, and there are others. And it really came together beautifully at that Visby thing. So it was a lot to coordinate, lots of people coming from different locations and not knowing how to get there, and not knowing how many were going to turn up and putting the seats out and managing such a big group. And I know it was a challenge, but it's that group is really, it's the most fun project I ever worked on, because I never experienced quite such pure selfless teamwork. So people would, I'm trying to coordinate the whole, so that was one meeting which I coordinated. So we different people take turns coordinating them, and I was doing that one. And so people would come up to me and say, people would notice that something needed doing, come up to me and ask me, do you want it done like this or done like this? And I'd say, let's do it like that. And then they would go away and do it. It was really almost telepathic what was going on. And it's when you have a group who really trust each other, have learned to rely on each other, have learned that I think we do a really nice job of not grabbing attention for us. And so it's really very selfless, the way things work there. And it's just everyone wants to make these things happen. Everyone's there by choice. No one has to be there. And as a result, you just have a really beautiful set of interactions that, So it was a lot of work, mm-hmm. but with a bunch of, with four or five other people who also want to make it work. I mean, this is, I think, one of our rules in the Unconference article, learning to trust your community, is when, everyone who came along that evening wanted to have a good time, wanted the evening to work. And when you trust them to make that happen, and you trust that that's their motivation for being there, then it works. And it always works. It's every single time. No matter how... if I'm honest, I probably am reasonably well prepared for each event. Sometimes I'm mm-hmm. not so sure how well it's going to go. But the people who are there will always make it a success. Because why else would they mm-hmm. be giving up their evening? Apart from to make the evening a successful evening. And, I used to be, and probably still am, a bit of a control freak. And one of the healthiest things for me in this, in being involved in these projects, is learning to give that up. And and then, I don't know what experience the other people on this call have of that, but when you then delegate, when you give people power and opportunity, and you empower them to make things happen the way they want to make them happen, then they do an awesome job, because they appreciate being given this opportunity and they want it to work. Otherwise, why would they be there? And
they want to be involved.
Yeah, that's absolutely. The pleasure when after one of the meetings, someone, let's say a master student, comes up to us and says, it'd be really great if you did a meeting on this. And then we can turn to them and say, we'd love to help you do that. You can... Your interaction could be as little as giving us the rough idea and we'll do it, or you could be completely involved in everything and lead the whole thing. We're happy to help you do that. And I mean, the response you get from people when you give them that chance continues to amaze me. So as a context for general personal development, these kinds of events are really beautiful. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I agree with Aidan, and he's right in saying it doesn't matter how stressed the organizers are going into an event. I've had a similar experience with trusting the community. If they come back the next time, it means they enjoyed the previous time, and you have to just let that go. So if they come back, it means that it's been worthwhile, and it's been a good event.
Mm-hmm. So you basically learn to use the intrinsic motivation that people bring, and you trust in this, right? And so it's also this kind of responsibility. People learn to take responsibility for their own actions, right? Because usually they can always push it to the form or to the structure that is there. And there they really have to do the things, but they can do the things they really want to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. And they don't feel alone in it as well. They can turn to someone else and say, hey, should we do this? And they feel like they're a team within a community, which is also capacity building.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just maybe coming back to one of the initial questions I had, technically, or let's say from the infrastructure, what do you guys use for this? Natasha, do you have a mailing list? Do you have a wiki? What do you use to organize your community for these meetings?
Yeah, so originally I was at a Petra Kutcher event, which is also an example of this kind of open meeting, where I was there with a friend and I was describing the unseminar structure, and he jumped in and said he'll create a website. So he went and he created a WordPress website, which had all the information. And from there, we sent out a lot of emails. For the first event, it was a lot of personal interaction. It was a lot of individual emails to encourage people to join, to bring a friend. And from there, we established a mailing list. So there is a mailing list that goes out now to tell people about when the next event will take place. There's also a calendar application on the website, which people can download, and then it gets updated automatically. So we're still trying to see what works best for people. I'm very loath to spam people or send them a lot of emails when they don't want to receive these. But to date, no one has complained, and I think it's been working quite well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so this is in basically preparing a such event. So the mailing list is, I guess, you said there are three different universities. So are the people mainly, or all people coming from these different universities? Are there also some not from those universities, or is mainly this community basically?
It's mainly this community. We are thinking of trying to spread it out to more of the Technicons as well. We've had a couple of people from industry. So the industry people come and see if there have been new technologies, if there are new people that they can meet, or the new people that they collaborate with. They haven't tried to take over. So I think for now it's nice to have a little bit of a industry input where people are genuinely just interested in being part of the bioinformatics community.
Mm-hmm. And
I just have I always feel that at least in Europe and probably also in the English speaking countries of the US and Europe, I always feel that the community around bioinformatics is already at a certain stage of being a community and being quite connected.
Yes.
What's actually the status in South Africa?
I agree. I think people within bioinformatics share a little bit of the open source computing attitude. So people who want to spend weekends together working on a computer program, or people who enjoy talking about new developments in computational tools. So I think people who have left academia, so who aren't necessarily in research anymore, but are part of industry, they still share a lot of the same values, and that's why I think they want to be part of the community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I think of us in Heidelberg, we've got lots of bioinformaticians there, and I didn't know really any of them apart from the people who had left our institute and moved to other institutes. I think there's sort of at an international level, I'm aware of quite a lot of people who are quite active in the social media and other sort of prominent, obvious communities associated with bioinformatics. But part of what was driving us was that we realized we really didn't know each other very well. And that's definitely changed. We know each other much better. We also have people from industry joining us. In particular, there's two companies where quite a lot of people who used to work for Emble are now working there. It's really interesting, particularly because I think these events and the community offers an interesting opportunity for personal and professional development. It's often the people in academia, still in academia, are really interested to have a chance to meet people who've managed to successfully move out of academia into industry. I think it adds quite a nice... I'm really glad that these people choose to come along, and yet, as Natasha describes, these are people who have still got very much the open, sharing, interacting attitude that bioinformaticians in academia often have.
I think it's a very important thing to do, to build this community, because it's very often, you know, that I was this for myself for quite a while, that you are basically the pet bioinformatician, the only bioinformatician in a group, and you don't have anybody to talk to, right? And you're basically sitting in your silo and don't know how to solve your problems or something like this, and then connecting to such a community again can be very helpful and inspiring. Right. I mean, I guess this is also the initial motivation for you guys to start this.
I mean, it's so within the organization, within Emble, where I work, my job is to manage a project which is aimed. What part of it is to manage? Part of my job is to manage a project which is about linking together the bioinformaticians across our institute in Heidelberg. And it's precisely because of this perception that there are these lone bioinformaticians in groups who don't have anyone to talk to. And I think it's even in that context as well, it's amazing how beneficial it is. just to bring that group of people together into one room every now and then. With community building and community management, it's often difficult to sort of demonstrate the clear benefits of what you've done, because it's, you know, once people actually know each other, things start happening that they don't even report back to you, who's the person who's supposed to be managing the project and so on. But I know that lots of things have happened now as a result of us just coming together that hadn't happened before. And I think that most humans, the non-sociopath psychopaths out there, get a specific and distinct pleasure from... Was that you coughing there, comrade?
Sorry for that.
They get a specific pleasure just from finding people who enjoy the same things, are interested in the same things, and, you know, even if no tangible, specific, easy-to-measure stuff came out of that community building work, just the fact that we know each other better, and that's just, like, nicer, more fun, and I think that, you know, generally raising the happiness quotient of everyone and, you know, making collaborations easier. Because
I think it's also worth mentioning that within this any scientific field, there might be a lot more introverts than extroverts. And these kind of people don't generally put up their hands at a conference to ask the questions they want to ask. But within an unseminar or an unconference environment, as soon as they know at least 4 or 5 people, I think they have that confidence to freely ask whatever they want to know. So I think for those kind of people, including myself, it's been a really nice experience to be able to approach a lot of people that I wouldn't have necessarily approached if I hadn't met them in a more social environment.
I completely agree. The something that I still don't quite get, because I don't know, some strange mix of introvert and extrovert, but there's people who come along really regularly to the meetings who are often, they just kind of sit there and don't really talk to anyone very much. And yet they keep coming back. I'm so glad that they want to. And I'm so glad that, I mean, maybe I'm patting ourselves unnecessarily on the back here, but that we seem to have created a friendly, welcoming group where even people who aren't really into chatting with each other can feel comfortable. I don't quite get why. I mean, I know what it feels like not to want to talk to anyone, really. That's, you know, I know those moments. And by structuring the evenings or the events into lots of small group work where maybe you're just talking to one or two other people, I think that's really valuable for giving people the confidence to, you know, to talk about this topic, these ideas with just one or two other people, get feedback from them, to have the feeling that they are, you know, making sense, and that this is, you know, valid points that they're making, so that if you then do have a sort of a reconvening session where people put up their hands and share with the whole group, they've already talked about these things once before. It's so much easier for shy people, in my experience, to then contribute to what's going on in the whole group. That's something else I really enjoy and really appreciate and value in these meetings.
I think it's important because often science is, let's say, a very hard and competitive and stressful job. I mean, maybe there are others as well, but I think many people are experiences all this pressure that we have in there, and maybe having also the social aspect of such a community, not only that you get new insights and new information, but also that you see that maybe other people struggling with similar issues or having also the same problems as you might help you getting better along with this kind of problems,
Definitely.
I suspect that the most frequent, if I was to think of all the conversations I have at these meetings, probably the most frequent one is me talking to a PhD student in their second or third year who's having a really miserable time of it, and me saying to them, like, oh, yeah, it's really difficult, and I don't ever want to do it again. And yes, the reason you're finding it really, really difficult is because it's really, really difficult. And just, you know, just giving them a context in which it feels safe to share those feelings, which are so common, and yet in our perhaps somewhat, I would like to not use the word macho, but in sort of this thrusting alpha environment that we often find ourselves in, where you can feel comfortable to acknowledge that, yeah, to talk about what's really going on in a safe, supportive context, and to help people find others who they can share like that with. I really enjoy this sort of mentorship aspect of it.
It's a little bit like Bioinformatics Anonymous here. Right?
Totally. Yeah, yeah. So, it's exactly. My name is Aidan, and it is 10 years.
I have a problem.
Since I had my PhD.
And I still do not want to go back and do it again.
Awesome. Guys, maybe you can, you have now a lot of experience in this, and unconference, unseminars is, let's say, a rather broad expression for a lot of very different styles and or formats that you can choose. Maybe we can try to give a short overview about the different options one would have if somebody decides to have a, let's say, less formal meeting. Maybe we can, let's try to put some examples together, what can be done and how this can be done, maybe. So, Aidan, I think you experienced with many things already. Maybe you can start with a handful or something.
Sure,
like this.
Happy to. I think the thing that they all share, so people talk about in an unconference, it's about doing things that are typically different from a conference. For me, the thing I'm most interested in flipping when it comes to a conference is the power relationship. And that is, so normally a conference is about having a powerful sort of a senior people standing at the front making the decisions about what you talk about and what you're going to hear. And then most people turn up and just listen. And so for me, the thing I care about most with my unconference sessions is that we do as much of the opposite of that as possible, give as much as that power to decide what's talked about and discussed to the average participant as possible. Just off the top of my head, two approaches that have names that we've used a few times that I enjoy. One is called Lean Coffee. And this is a way of organizing that works best with relatively small groups. And it's, would you like, should I describe it? We've got time, haven't we?
Yes, please, please.
A bunch of people turn up who have some kind of common interest. And they've come to an unseminar on bioinformatics, so we have some common interest there. People take post-it notes and write short descriptions of topics they would like to talk about on the post-it notes. And then everyone, once we've put all those post-it notes together on a table, each one of them gets like a two-sentence introduction from the person who proposed it. Then everyone gets two votes. You have a pen, and I can put two marks on one post-it, or I can put one mark on one post-it and one mark on another. And everyone at the meeting does this. And so you end up with a particular number of votes is given to each of the different topics. And then you start a discussion with the topic that has the largest number of votes. So everyone who came along has had an opportunity to control the content of the meeting, because they've got to propose the topics they want to talk about. And we've found out which topics are the most interesting for the most people in the group. And then we talk about that topic for 8 minutes, and we've tried lots of different times, and 8 minutes seems to be the winner. And after 8 minutes, if it's not over, we do sort of a Romans in the amphitheater thing, like thumbs up, thumbs down. And if almost everyone has the thumbs up, we get 4 more minutes. And if it's half and half, it's 2. And if it's kind of less than half, a lot less than half, then we stop the topic completely. And we actually, I use this at in our internal community building work at Emble as well. And it's really a nice way of, as long as you have senior people who are prepared to give up a bit the control of a meeting, it's a really nice way of making sure that you have a meeting where what gets talked about in that hour is precisely and exactly that which the people who turned up at that meeting would most like to talk about. And I really find it great that the senior people who come along to our meetings at Emble are prepared to do that. So, all right, it's time to stop because the thumbs are all going down. So it's a really nice way of organizing interactions in small groups to focus the discussion on the specific topics that the people who have chosen to come along are most interested in. And it has quite a lot in common with another common open format like this, which is known as open space technology. And I think you, Comrade, have taken part in such a meeting yourself.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And this is, it's not so dissimilar. People come together. The difference here is that people who choose to come to this meeting, which you have openly advertised, should have something that they are, you know, they really care about doing or working on or fixing or so on. And that's the reason they've come together. People do a quick sort of brainstorming and come up with, again, with topics that they would like to talk about. You again write things on post-it notes. Again, people do a two-sentence introduction to each of these topics. And then, however, you split up into different groups. And everyone who's at the meeting is welcome to join whichever of the small group breakout discussion groups have happened. So again, you're focusing on making the content and the structure of the meeting controlled by the people who've chosen to come along to the meeting. You have, for open space technology, this, I really love it, this rule of the 2 feet. And that is that if you're in a discussion and you're not contributing to it and not learning from it, then you should go somewhere else. So it's encouraging people to take this responsibility you were talking about before, Conrad, to make sure that the discussions that they're having in this time that they have chosen to allocate to being at this meeting as useful for them as possible. As long as everyone does that, then you're going to have the best possible discussion you could have. Okay, maybe I'm overstating it. Maybe if you optimize it in some, I don't know, but it's at least pushing in that direction, trying to make the time that is spent together in that meeting as useful, and it's exploiting the groups of people who have chosen to come together as much as possible. That's 2 examples of formats that we've played with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Natasha, what have you used so far? Do you have something, I mean, if what you used has a certain name, or what is your approach being in or having such a meeting? What did you do?
Yeah. So to be honest, we haven't explored any of these specific ways of having conferences. Things that we have had to ensure, and what we found that has worked very well, is that the environment that you place people in definitely plays a big role. So if if the chairs are too widely spaced apart, participants won't interact as much. If the acoustics are sound a bit funny, it isn't as enjoyable. So for us, it's been trying to find a location that people enjoy and that they're happy to drive to specifically. And then also trying to move away from a presentation style event and still make sure that people take something from it, so that they learn or that they feel that they have contributed. So we still are very much at the beginning stages, and we're trying to get people to interact more. We're trying to get the participants to feel that they are in control of what's happening. We hope that in the near future, more people will be involved in the organization, because I think we're definitely moving towards that. It's difficult in the beginning, and people want to check out the situation. They want to see if they do want to keep coming back.
I guess it's a moving target, right? Because the community might be changing a little bit, might be growing or something like this, and still you have to adapt the format, right? And these kind of things. Okay, yeah. But it's interesting, even let's say the spacing and so on. I guess it's rather tough to get this right. Do you basically ask the people afterwards how they like it, or do you have kind of a feedback session, or how do you do this, or just experiment next time? We will try something else.
I think I asked too many times if people have enjoyed it or if they've got any feedback, because they do seem to feel that they get something from these events. I probably just have a very high standard of what I want them to get from it. But I think, I mean, it's part of the trusting your community, and if they feel that what they are contributing to it is enough, then that's enough, you know. And then we're waiting for new participants to join who do want to take more of a organizational role, or who have several ideas that they want to explore, or if they want to use the platform for inviting fellow people from the CUB events to training sessions, for instance. it's you know, like, I think within time, the people will have more motivation to take part, because once they see the benefit for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm. And you run your unseminars also as a kind of a after work thingy, or during the weekend, or what is your time frame?
It's also after work. We try. Mm-hmm. So one of the things in Cape Town is the traffic. So mm-hmm. after work at 5 o'clock, people will struggle to get to places. So we generally start around 5:30 or 6. And it has been at the different locations, so at the different universities, or at least the different regions where the universities are located. We've had events at all of these regions, and it hasn't stopped people from attending. So we've always had about between probably about 10 and 30 people, 10 being when it's really cold in winter. Cape Town cold. Stop laughing.
Look, I've got the fire on at the moment. Just saying.
But it's very interesting. You know, I haven't thought about this at all, right? Because I was living in Heidelberg as well. Maybe I should mention Aidan and me. We know each other from our time at Emble, because I was also doing my PhD there. So I know Heidelberg, and you know. Traffic is not really an issue there, but I can imagine in a larger city like Cape Town, you really have to take this into account. And if you want to bring people from different locations together, this has to be a very important consideration when planning this.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a very good point.
Especially in places where you don't have public transport, people rely on getting to these kinds of events together. So lift sharing. And it also kind of puts pressure on us or on the organizers to make sure that we don't always hold it at the same location. So that people don't always feel that they have to drive a half an hour to get to an event. You know, I think it's brilliant that people are doing this, already. But you obviously want to keep it as fair as possible.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, sure. But this is something I haven't thought of so far. Okay. I think, Aidan, you said you usually go afterwards to a bar or something like this. Are Natasha, are you doing the same? Are you also, you know, once the group's together, people, you know, I don't know, subgroup is going somewhere, or what is the behavior afterwards? Just, you know, to have some cultural differences or similarities here?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, we definitely do go to a bar afterwards. If there's not wine available at the event itself, we generally move on to a bar and the conversations carry on, and that's part of the enjoyment of these kind of events.
Yes, we've been told that we have to remember to put on the poster that we will go to the pub afterwards, and specifically which pub we should go to, because there's people for whom that seems to be the most important part, and that's fine. I get that.
Everybody has a motivation, exactly. Right, it's their own. Okay, Matthias, any point from your side?
I was just remembering when I had to organize smaller events when I was working for the Fraunhofer Society. I always try to get those people out of their usual context and out of their institutes and out of their labs where they had their heads around their usual problems. So whenever you had a smaller seminar or a smaller event in those institutes, they were usually talking to people about the problems that they have to face next day. So we always try to get them out of their usual context and space and environment and put them into something that we felt might be even encouraging to be more creative and to think about problems in a different kind of way from different angles and different approaches. And I always remember that when it comes to how important the location is, actually, that you try to find to host a certain event.
It's interesting you say that, Matthias. We also hung on a while before we started the organizing our events, even though we had this seed of an idea, because we were waiting to be able to run them in town. So Emble is at the top of a hill, surrounded by cows. Like, it's not. Public transport got better. When I started 15 years ago, there was a bus every 2 hours. That was like at the, that was in rush hour. It was every 2 hours. Sorry, rush 2 hours or whatever. It's still not super easy to get there. And there are other institutes. There's an institute called HITS in Heidelberg, which is on the top of a different hill. And it's also non-trivial to get there. And we had the luck that one of the people interested in making these things happen, or at least encouraging that they did happen, became a professor in the Heidelberg University. And then suddenly we got access to downtown rooms to make thing, to make these things happen in. And that was, that was just what we needed. So now we can have the meeting in the middle of town on the market square, more or less, and we can go to the student Mensa. What's that? The student Marshda. What is there's a word for it for people who don't know the word Mensa. It's like the bar, a canteen. Exactly. We can go to the student canteen, which will serve food and drinks. It even serves food in term time when we get out of our meetings at 9 o'clock. And that was perfect. I mean, that was super convenient. And I don't think it would have worked as well if we were attempting to bring people up this hill at 6:30 at night. I mean, it's just no way. So that was essential, I think, to it working.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you stay in the environment where you have stress, it's harder to relax. And especially with moving between locations, the people seem quite interested in seeing new locations. You know, they want to know where you are organizing the next event. So it's actually, it puts some pressure on us as well to organize it at really nice places for people to get to know different areas.
By the way, what is, if you can estimate this, how much time do you on average invest in planning such an event? Is it, you know, is it doable for one person easily, or do you really have to put a lot of effort into this, or is it, can it be 1 hour, can it be 1 day, what is it roughly, if you can give it a number?
I dream of doing one of these on my own. That would that would suck. I'm guessing maybe if I think of people hours, so we usually have at least one hour planning meeting where we might have 6, 7, 8 people, so that's already 8. Maybe 10, 15 or more per event. I'm taking that across everyone who's involved.
All right. Natasha, what about you?
For our events, which have so far been a little bit smaller, we've managed to delegate a large part of it. And in some cases, not where it's been. So so to kind of create an average or range of time that we've spent on it, it's anywhere between 2 to 20 hours, I'd say.
All right. Okay.
These these things do get easier the more you do them. I mean, we spent an inordinate amount of time on the first one. I was totally paranoid that no one would come, so I had loads of one-on-one chats with loads of different people to encourage them to sign up and to come along. I mean, it worked. We had like maybe 35 people for that one, but that was an awful lot of work. And in fact, I remember saying to my boss, like, after that, oh god, I'm not doing another one of them for another 6 months. And he said, no, you need to do it again sooner, otherwise you're going to lose the momentum. And I kind of grumbled but then did what he told me, because, you know, that's the way it works. And he was, as is always the case, right. And you know, the next time there were more people involved and we could spread the load, and it gets easier and easier. And I really think one of the key parts to it becoming easier is learning and getting better at this trust thing. It's like it slowly gets easier just to give it up and know that the people who turn up are going to work to make it a good event. So that our last meeting was like 2 weeks ago, and it was snowing. No, it wasn't really snowing. It was sleet. So, you know, that wonderful mixture of snow and rain. And it was quite heavy, and it was not a nice evening to be out. And in the market, in the university square where we were having the meeting on one of those buildings, there was an anti-Pegida march. So hopefully, Natasha, you're not too aware of the
No, please don't.
Anti-Islamist, anti. Yeah, I don't want to think about it in too much detail. But anyway, this was a march against people who have problems with the amount of non-Westernness that's going on in Germany. Anyway, so they're having their anti-march. So it's kind of all these things came together. And I think we had 10, 11 people. But that's the smallest we've ever had. And yet the people who turn up, yet again, what do? They're there. They want it to be a success. So we, the evening goes in such a way that we all have a good time. It's, again, I was reminded of how, you know, those people who turn up, they want to make it work.
Sounds good, yeah. But by the way, I'm not sure if, no, I think I haven't mentioned this to you, Aiden, so far, because after our last podcast, basically, our last episode, you really set me on fire, basically. Wow. So I went back. Yes, awesome. No, I'm really burned. So Malvika, a PhD student in the group, and who also was basically at your combined HubCup meeting, she is also very keen on getting this done here. And we actually started with this now. I mean, started in the sense of we thought about, okay, how do we organize this? So I'm currently organizing where to set up a mailing list. And we first thought, Let's generate a subgroup at Open Wetware, or basically a page at Open Wetware where you can organize groups. But I think Open Wetware is not properly maintained anymore. I'm not 100% sure about this. So we will have a small thing on GitHub pages. Ah, maybe one step back. So we first thought, should we use university infrastructure for running this? And we thought maybe not. Maybe should make it really show that this is kind of an informal thing. So we might hopefully get a mailing list from the Open Knowledge Foundation, or now just Open Knowledge, and run the website basically on GitHub. I would like to have your feedback. And we have kind of a meeting here for some bioinformaticians, which I organized for people interested in NGS and next generation sequencing, and I announced it there. So I think this is a good starting point. The question is, do you think it is a good decision to go off the university and make it in parallel, or do you think it's we're losing something with this? Maybe I should also mention, Würzburg is rather small. It's actually the size of Heidelberg, so we won't have these traffic issues. And I think we even are smaller in that sense that we don't have other communities or other institutes that run bioinformatical groups, basically. So in the end, most of the people, or I guess 99% of the potential people that might come, are from the university. But still, we thought it's maybe a healthier thing to keep it off. You know, people will do this basically in their spare time and not as part of their business life. What do you think about that? Do you have any opinions regarding that?
I can jump in. So we started off on university infrastructure because it was easy. And I think there's a lot to be said for doing it in a way that's that's easy. As time went on, as we already are a Verein, and hopefully one day we're going to be an eingetragener Verein. Why should you know what those words mean? So that's like an official kind of society is the Verein, and an eingetragener Verein is a particular kind of legal entity which brings a set of advantages. Can you hear my cat purring?
Yeah, it's cute.
That's Gatti, or as he's sometimes known, his imperial fluffiness. Or
we're waiting for a picture.
Or G Star. Or the G-Man. That's Fluffy Getty. What was I saying? We host the our content and our wiki on Überspace, which is an awesome German language, as you can imagine from the name of the thing, remote hosting service. And we pay for that. But we feel it's money well spent because we do really enjoy being completely independent. And particularly as we move to be a sort of a Verein, as an independent legal entity, it's important for us to be running that on resources that we ourselves, the Verein, are paying for. That feels like the right thing to do. But I also felt that at the beginning, doing it in a way that was taking something that was already an awful lot of work and making it less work, in other words, running it on one of the machines in one of our labs, that was also, I felt very, that was fine by me. I think that was the pragmatically appropriate decision.
Mm. I mean, from the view of somebody who might be interested in participating, I always look at those community projects. Like, if they are connected to a certain university, you have an instant feeling of, "Ooh, that's something earnest. They're not joking around. Mm-hmm. It's something serious, like official."
Yep.
On the other side, if you pull it a bit apart from the very official university side, you might offer the folks that want to participate something that they can actually build their own community, and they feel they're not restricted as being directly part of the university, so they might feel a bit freer, and they might even feel a bit more encouraged to do something more. So I
think that we benefit from the feeling that we own this. This is us, and it's what we want it to be. And I mean, sometimes senior PIs, professors come along, and they've always been great. And it's one of the, so I'm full of praise for my boss, both Natasha and Conrad, no, Toby. And he's the most frequent senior person who comes along to our meetings. And it's really great. Well, I'm always pleased just to be able to share him with that group of people, because he's very open and very, very happy just to play along with whatever. Maybe he thinks it's nonsense what we're doing. No, he doesn't. He just kind of accepts it and plays along and is friendly and open and charming to everyone. But what was my point? There was a point.
For the ones who don't know, you're talking about Toby Gibson, right?
Ah, sorry, do beg your pardon. Toby Gibson, he of Clustal X, Clustal W fame, publisher of two of the most frequently cited papers in science ever, in the top 20 or something like that, yeah. So a very modest, very, very charming chap.
Extremely modest.
I consider myself lucky to have worked with him all these years. I was trying to say something about universities and linking to, I think.
And you owning your.
Yes. And it wouldn't work if powerful senior people tried to take over, then the sense of common shared interest and values and goals would be missing, and it just wouldn't work. And I think we've been very lucky that the senior people who've chosen to come along, I think I can count the PIs who've been along on maybe one hand. But they've all come and played along as well. And it's been important, I think, that it's felt like we do indeed have the power to make happen what we want to have happen. Otherwise, what would be the point of the whole thing?
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. This kind of supports my strategy, or our strategy, not my strategy, our strategy to put a little away from the university and keep it more open. We'll see how this works out. And I think nothing is written in stone, right? You can always shift it, but it's good way or good. It's important to think in the beginning of these things and try to get it right.
I was just thinking the other day, I think I may even have mailed you, Conrad. Let us know when you have a meeting. Maybe we can do a hub Ausflug. Maybe we can do an outing.
Yes, this is. I'm really counting on this. Fun. So as said, we are still thinking about the infrastructure and getting this together. And I hope in March or so we have the first meeting, and then I will inform you. Maybe some of you guys can come over and have a help us bootstrap the whole thing here.
Look forward to it.
Cool. Yeah, so this is why it's very great to have some specialists here on this topic and helping this. Actually, I mean, one could also think if one at some point make this bigger and basically build a platform for this or kind of a manual for this, right? I mean, kind of in your wiki, I would really love to have your experience. I mean, this is maybe what we're doing right now is maybe part of this, basically documenting the pitfalls and the solutions to different things for the community. This would be very helpful.
I certainly have my eye on, there's Cape Town and Würzburg and maybe also Barcelona will have a go at doing something like this soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, I don't know. I don't quite trust my enthusiasm for this because, I don't know. I enjoy it so much and I see all these benefits, but I sometimes worry I'm overselling it or I don't know. And I would feel good if more different people in different places also continue to have success doing things like this. I think I will feel a bit more comfortable about my my advocacy and my enthusiasm for these things. But I would say there is an article waiting to be written once several different people in different locations have run a whole, you know, a series of events and feel that they understand what made them work well and what made them work less well. And then surely we can get together and write 10 simple rules for organizing a series of community building unseminar events. And
we really need details, right? The other paper was really giving the overview, and this was very important to give the basic principles. But I think it's very important to give maybe people tools. As maybe let's say I need an icebreaker. I need a list of 5 different icebreakers I can start with. These kind of things, or let's say 10 different formats I can play around with. This would be very helpful for the community, I think. And this would be the toughest part when starting this, to come up with these ideas.
I mean, if you look at other projects that started kind of the same way, for example, the Mozilla Science Labs, the software carpentry workshops, the School of Data workshops, they all started out of a group of mostly a very small group of enthusiasts just doing them and doing them repeatedly and telling others how they did it. And even especially in the case of the software carpentry, even providing materials to actually start and knowledge to actually set this up properly without struggling too much about those problems that the initial teams stumbled upon. I think there you have one or two or even three starting points, and if people get knowledge of this and find it attractive, they will try it out. And if they find proper help and get an easy access to a how-to and maybe even some starting material, it'll be easier and it will just start to grow, I think, because that's how all these other projects started as well.
I've started now uploading to our wiki basically all of the documents that I prepare, also for myself. So I usually, if I'm organizing it, I put up the script that I put together that I have in front of me when I'm facilitating the meeting, with all the notes that I've put in, the things I want to mention, and all the notes to myself about how I'm going to coordinate the different activities. And that's at the beginning, I guess we weren't thinking of a sort of sustainable infrastructure. We were just sort of thinking of making them happen. But, I think that by putting up all of this information, it does become easier for people to, replicate what we've done and what we've tried.
Yeah, this is exactly what I thought of. Yeah, great.
But I mean, I would, Konrad, once you've had a few events, once it feels like it's running, maybe we really can sit together and think about what is a resource that we can. I mean, I think it's really nice to do it in a context where it does produce a sort of a peer-reviewed article entity thing, because I think that's a great magnet to our communities for people to choose to collaborate. But something that really was, you know, was you could have, I don't know, a table with a list of icebreakers in it with links to, there's usually a link somewhere in the web to somewhere where people have done it. And that could be a really handy way of getting it moving. But at the same time, I think just advertising, I think all of our, you know, pleasure in talking with people who are interested in doing these things and helping them make it work for themselves. Yeah, it's also important.
That was one of the really interesting things when I started reading and reading in parallel between the previous sessions in Heidelberg and the previous sessions in Cape Town. And I thought that it's really interesting to see those two angles based in not only some different cultures, but also in slightly different scientific cultures. And then if you would see something like this growing in China or in India, it would even be more interesting to see how they set up something like those ANT seminars and how it builds up in what they need as icebreakers. And maybe there's some totally different cultural influence, but then you figure out some common points and to elaborate on this, that would be really interesting.
In a way, you guys sitting on the perfect infrastructure, at least Aiden, because EMBO is organizing several of these international conferences and seminars and workshops. And yes, really everywhere in the world. So this might be a very good way of spreading this format, worldwide, right?
Yes, I mean,
what you did basically, right? I mean, you did it basically with your stay in Cape Town, right? And you helped there as well. So, Natasha, how do you do this in South Africa? Do you have any? Have you kept it so far to Cape Town? Do you have contact to people in other cities to spread the format? What's your approach?
So the funny thing is, during the first event that we held, several people from different universities across the country were actually in Cape Town participating in another training course. And several of these individuals attended the first event, and they have asked to be kept on the mailing list. So they still want to know what's going on in Cape Town when we do have the CUB events. And they have definitely been encouraged to create their own events. The one area in South Africa is Pretoria, and they are very excited about calling themselves the Pub Club. So even if they only have one event, I think they will do very well.
I kind of have to throw in there that I had one of my most amazing pub nights in I don't know how many years in Cape Town last year. The Long Street pub experience was something, that's going to stay in my memory for a while. That was pretty awesome. Anyway, sorry. I'm not like only into drinking. That's
really
drinking and seminars.
And cats. No. And cats.
Sounds like a healthful combination. Okay. By the way, I mean, spreading this is actually something that can be done in a different manner as well, right? What you basically did at ISMB ECCB, you basically hijacked one of the Birds of the Feather meetings there, right? So this could be done at basically every conference that maybe gives you 1.5 hours or 2 hours of their time.
I would really encourage people to try. I mean, I think you need... I don't want it to fail. I mean, it is stressful and I do want it to work out, but it was easy. I mean, I was busy with lots of other things at that meeting and we threw that together in really 2-3 hours of me brainstorming with John and Manny and we put it together and it was fine. And particularly at a meeting where there's not been so many opportunities for people to really, in a sort of slightly contrived way, get to know each other. Which is, the social engineering we do at these things is very deliberate and I think is very worthwhile. We don't always do it, but I try and remind everyone before we go into one of our meetings to, as soon as they see someone that they don't recognize, that they go up and introduce themselves to them and then chat with them. So, taking this artificial situation that we're in and using it as a way of overcoming both our and other people's awkwardnesses at, I can't stand going into I was at a party at the weekend and I go in and there's a room full of people I don't know. What do? Sit down in the corner and wait for someone to come and talk to me. But when it comes to one of these unseminars, it's like our job is to welcome people. And so we shall do it. And, I don't know. I think it pays dividends. I wanted to mm-hmm. come back to the comment about making, bringing more people into it. I noticed on the Twitters, maybe yesterday or today. I don't know. Have you ever heard of EdCamp? So
yeah. Yes,
EdCamp
sure.
Is like unseminars for teachers. I think it would be a way of describing it. And it's a pretty active hashtag. on Twitter about it, and I noticed that someone somewhere is trying the virtual EdCamp. And so it's like sit in your pajamas and still do EdCamp. And I mean, I think that particularly if, when, as these technologies that Conrad and Matthias were talking about earlier mature, we really do have opportunities for, you know, not just linking in the isolated bioinformatician within the group in the institute where he's only surrounded by biologists, but really people who are in locations where they don't have anyone around them who they can even easily meet with. I'm really curious and interested, and I think it'd be really fun to try and explore more virtual ways of doing this. But for that, we need to try it out in, you know, additional safe contexts where people have, you know, this this very generous exploratory attitude to, you know, we try it, and if it doesn't work, that's also fine. But I think that that could be also a very fun, exciting way of making it go. And I have to point out one of the reasons that it's been was so useful, convenient, and handy to collaborate with Cape Town is that in our summer, their winter, it's the same time zone. Extremely handy.
Yeah.
I have to, if people are interested in looking at organizing virtual events like this, there's a great 10 simple rules article in PLOS Computational Biology. It's really quite old now. It's maybe 3-4 years old, and it's about organizing virtual conferences. And it was inspired by a virtual bioinformatics conference that was organized in Africa in 2011, maybe. And the group who, or some of the group who organized that conference, also organized a virtual training course in Africa in 2012, I think. And I did some teaching as part of that. And it was superbly organized. And I also remember noticing, I kind of was involved in the training course and then found this paper and noticed that they'd followed all their own advice. And that I considered that pretty rare. I mean, I often write down advice to people and then notice I don't follow it myself. But they had done that very well, and it had made everything really much easier. And one of the things to keep an eye on is time zone issues. And I was, I'm sure we saved significant amounts of time and effort because Cape Town and Heidelberg are in the same time zone.
Oh, true. This is important. I think I did the first virtual online symposium in 2006. This was part of the Embleship symposium. This was stressful. Whoa. I can tell you.
You're giving me flashbacks now, Conrad. I have these faint memories of that. Wow.
The PhD symposia.
I think I was a teenager in 2006 or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. Yes. Let me think, what else should we cover? Maybe this recommendation, whenever you run such a conference or a normal conference, maybe you should think about having a small breakout session and testing these formats or running this completely, right? I mean, bar camps, hackathons, all these kind of things are basically similar instances of the same idea, are making stuff more flexible, more informal, right? I think you could also do this. Have you thought about doing hackathons as well, or is it a format that is? I mean, this needs much more time. But have you thought about this as well? Especially as bioinformaticians, this might be a natural thing to do.
So down in Cape Town, we've had two hackathons where we have managed to. We've got some friends and ex-colleagues who have a small startup, which isn't actually that small anymore, and they were happy enough for us to use their office space. Which is very much set up for an overnight kind of working environment. So we spent a weekend there doing a lot of work on a specific project, and the people who were there came back for the second round, and I think it is something that we've definitely enjoyed to do, and like, very motivated, get to know people, become a stronger team within the broader sense of the bioinformatics community.
Okay, and maybe this is our limited view here, because the three or four of us here are bioinformaticians. Do you think this is a concept, not the hackathons, but the unconferences and unseminars in general, that other fields of science should do as well? Or do you see this happening? Or why is it us bioinformaticians doing this? Any idea?
I mean, I think this is Open Science Radio, and I think it's not a coincidence. I mean, I think the probability would be, let me get this right. I think that if I was to guess at which kind of scientist would be involved in that coming from the biological sciences, I would guess that it would be a bioinformatician, because I think that we are really focused on and depend upon and, you know, feel and suffer when it isn't open, what we do, when stuff isn't shared. It's very frustrating. And we're really, we're really used to depending on people sharing their stuff in a format that allows us to be able to work with it as well. And this, you know, there's a pressure on reproducibility and so on. And I assume that that promotes inherently a sort of sense of openness and community and whatever. I mean, we're not necessarily compelled, but I think we're quite a lot of us are kind of inherently motivated to focus on, you know, facilitating and making easy interactions with each other. And so I think it does perhaps there really lend itself to the unconference format. I look not very hard, but every now and then to see if these kinds of things are being done in other contexts, and I don't really see anything. So I think it's got a lot to bring to pretty much any field. But I think it's not a coincidence that we all happen to be bioinformaticians, and that's where it's been starting. I mean,
By the way, this was one thought that Malvika and me had when we were discussing how to start our community here, and we weren't sure should we limit this to bioinformatics? Should we talk about bioinformatics, systems biology, or biology in general, or science in general? So our compromise is currently that we call it BioStar, so an asterisk for everything. It will be in the beginning, so WhoopStar might be our name for that.
Given that you're a relatively small community in general, just in the university, I often think about whether it would be useful for us to do it that way, to be broader.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just about survive but I think opening it and keeping it broad is a great idea.
What we've done down in Cape Town is say that anyone with an interest in bioinformatics is welcome to attend. And we have had people from genetics and biochemistry backgrounds attend these events and come back again for a second round, you know, for another event. So I don't think it's, in our context as well, I don't think it's a bad thing to open it up to anyone who's interested in and wanting to meet people within the bioinformatics community.
And we describe it as for people who are interested in bioinformatics and science communication. And we have journalists, and we have people who work on science administration, and we've had people working in science marketing and other things like that join us. And their motivation is that they're interested in sort of understanding this, or, you know, getting experience of this alternative mode of science communication, and we definitely benefit from that. One of the organizers of Hub Events is Adam Gristwood, who is a communications officer at Emble, and we have the idea that he will do a workshop on storytelling in science, an unseminar on that topic, I think that could be pretty neat. So that's the way we've sort of chosen to open it up. There's quite a lot of professionals in that area in Heidelberg, so we're quite lucky like that. But I think keeping it broad, there's always this tension between the fact that the broader you make it, the less specific. I mean, like, we've done a session on using Git, and I think you can't do that if your audience is people who are just generically interested in biology. But then...
They should. They should know this as well.
I agree.
but then, you know, then there are broad topics that are, careers, science-related careers. Surely that's something everyone's interested in. And, I think you can, if you've got the enthusiasm that comes from people having been involved in the events and having enjoyed them, you'll be able to find topics to talk about.
Hmm. Yeah, we will give it a try and we'll see. As said, nothing's written in stone. We can always rename it or change it or whatever. For the time being, we will keep it focused on bioinformatics, but keep the door open for others interested in this as well. So I guess we follow your example there. Mm. All right, Matthias, do you have any questions left?
I'm trying to figure out how it would actually be to offer something like that here in Berlin and to make it really open, maybe with kind of, how would you call it, maybe embedded in bioinformatics, but keep it open for participation of any field, whoever wants to. I'm kind of wondering whether this would attract, for example, a lot of art people, because what I've experienced over my time in Berlin, I'm living here now for, I don't know, 14 years or something like that, is whenever you open up sciences in Berlin, you have immediately a lot of creative people automatically in, as if they were trying to get something out of science for their own work, because it offers just a lot, be it knowledge, be it kind of really interesting fancy stuff.
So I think there's already quite a lot of similarity and overlap between our interests and the maker community.
Sure.
And I mean, if you're interested, do you know the MDC? The Max Delbruck Zentrum.
Yes,
so
yes.
Lucy Patterson is one of the communication officers there.
Yes, exactly.
And she's she's active, very active in the maker community and is involved in a range of, I don't know, participant-driven, sciencey, artsy, whatever events in that part of the world. And why don't we talk with her sometime? I mean, she's extremely busy, but I think that something that we've seen often works is a tie-in with another big event, a voluntary tie-in. So I've tried unconference sessions as part of a big conference where everyone at that time went to an unconference session. And then you have people who don't understand the rule of 2 feet. And then you have people who are sitting in the room who don't really want to be there. And it's not that's not a great dynamic. But I think if you do like a voluntary socially thing of an evening associated with a big life science event, for example, then that's what we did with Visby. And that worked really well. Only people who came along were the ones who thought it sounded a bit interesting to, you know, expectations, I think, were met well there. And it's like there's plenty of places to go to it for a drink afterwards in Berlin, I heard. Someone told me once. Yeah. And have you guys ever heard of LCD Sound System?
Yeah. Yes, the name. I know the name, but I can't.
So there's a song where they're from North America and they're going on about how excited they are about being in Europe, and you can go to Madrid and then there's a party and it goes on all night, or you could go to Berlin where it goes on for another night. So yeah, you've got something to live up to there. I think probably I would look to tie in with a big festival that was going on somewhere, or a big conference, and then look to see if they were interested in tying in with your activity. And then you'd have access to a whole bunch of people, often who had travelled from outside to be there, and so would be perhaps quite happy to spend an evening doing more active networking, community building stuff. And I think that could work quite well.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the MDC has tried out this year, or last year, I guess, in October or November. They had this state festival, Science, Art and Film. And I guess Lucy, with one of her colleagues, was the major force behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And they even made a science hack day on the day before the actual conference started.
Yeah.
But then again, that's something I always consider hackathons and hack days as something being more specific, because you usually get together in order to create something on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe only as a starting point, but in the end of the day, you want to have something done. And I always feel like seminars and unconference are kind of in the mood of, let the people start to think about something and give them kind of a crystallization point for their ideas and let then the people go out again and get together on their own kind of feeling.
I mean, I think it can work. I often feel that ours work quite nicely when there is this clear outcome that we're moving towards. I think as long as you give the people who come along a lot of opportunity to control what that thing is, then you're moving closer then towards this community thing of, so if you remember, I talked about community being based on people with shared interests, goals, and values who have a collaborative spirit, who want to make things happen together. And so I think that having a clear thing that you'd like to make have happen together, maybe it's writing an article, can be quite a nice way of focusing one of these meetings, because then you have this, you know, this collaborative thing that emerges from it. But yeah. Then that's a little bit different maybe from a hacking thing where sometimes people are doing it more for themselves. I don't know.
I think to have an seminar event where people eventually meet new collaborators, social collaborators, where they then come up with a cool idea to have a hackathon. I think that is more my interpretation of where the hackathons fit in with the unseminars. And similar as well with linking up with artists, especially it's not as much as Berlin, I'm sure, but Cape Town is a very large hipster community. Anything science at the moment is what all artists want to know about, and all the film industry people want to come into labs and do some kind of film or movie. So that's definitely actually a nice idea for something down here as well, where I think scientists or bioinformaticians, where we can link up with the arts environment and just create more awareness, both in terms of what bioinformaticians do, and maybe in the health sciences, you know, what's going on in research.
Good point, yeah. Okay, guys, Matthias, any further questions from your side?
Has anyone of you ever heard of Mitchell Stanton Cook?
Yes, he's in Queensland.
Right, and...
I met him when I was in November 2013 teaching in Sydney, but then I went up to Brisbane and he was interested in maybe thinking about like Queensland unseminars. I don't know. He's a lovely guy.
And wow. And a year ago, he set up a GitHub page called the Southeast Queensland Unseminars and Bioinformatics.
There we go.
So
amazing.
But unfortunately, since then, nothing has happened. But I think you can. That's. I just got reminded of that.
I think we should. I think we should all email him and ask him about it.
Yes.
And putting him a little under pressure. Yeah. Yeah, maybe you can link them the four towns via a WebRTC based platform. This would be awesome, huh? Okay, big plans. Okay, we first start locally here. Okay, guys, do you have anything that you think is important that we missed so far? Any awesomeness? Any important
point? Can you hear the pat purring? Can you hear the cat purring? we talked about, you know, a cattage quotient on the radio, and can you hear him? I can't hear him.
No,
I can't hear him.
Are we Gatti?
Not now.
Unfortunately not. I think now.
There we go. Okay, so you said if there was anything important, and I thought that was... Not
this is important. I hope you send a picture of the cat as well.
I will do.
But Aidan, I think we can also plug a little bit your search for a new job. By the way,
would say anyone who's hung on almost 2 hours of this, then
deserves this
then
now.
The Easter egg at the end is that yeah. I'm coming to the end of my 9 years. We have a 9-year rule at Emble, and most people can only stay for 9 years, and I'm most people. So, I'm looking for a job associated with community building and organizing events because I don't know, having touched and felt the power that these kinds of events and that community building does, brings you and others to make stuff happen, to make the stuff happen that you want to make happen, is something that I would love to keep doing. So I'm kind of snuffling around in the opportunities for doing that kind of thing as a consultant, but also looking for other organizations who might be interested in people who have that set of skills. I think it offers the opportunity to sort of raise morale. I mean, it's an opportunity to empower people who are working in an organization to try and find out things that they are, you know, maybe didn't realize that people were doing redundantly, and try and reduce that redundancy. But then also to, yeah, just make things happen that people who are working for you want to have happen, but you didn't realize. So also a way of sort of engaging with and communicating with groups of people who you maybe you didn't realize had, you know, particular interests and needs. So, or perhaps also with user communities. Yeah, that's something I'd love to do. If you have a job, then send it my way. Although, exactly.
You will get
totally in love with our small German idyll here in Helmstadt. So I wouldn't want to. Yeah, at the moment we're focusing on staying, me, Gatti, Sarah and Arthur together. God bless them.
In this area. And you will get the best person for this. He has written several papers. We mentioned the unseminar paper, but we didn't mention the other paper that came out, A Quick Guide for Building a Successful Bioinformatics Community. Also first author, Aidan Budd, in PLOS Computational Biology, just recently appeared.
No, that's okay. I mean, I'm blushing, but actually, of course, I have an ego. Yeah, and right, that's being gently polished, like the... Oh, you didn't. Everyone on the podcast didn't hear about the cat licking my top of my ball patch the other day. But yeah, polished just like that. Yeah, because that paper also came from the same ISMB ECCB meeting in Berlin. That was a workshop I organized together with the excellent Manuel Corpas and Michelle Brazas about what goes into building a strong, good, successful community for bioinformatics. And I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's some interesting lessons in there that are often related to trust and openness and good communication and so on. Yeah, that's something that community building thing is something I really enjoy.
So you can either read the paper or you can hire Aidan and he's taking care of everything, right? I mean,
okay. Yeah, right. Now I am definitely feeling awkward, but that's okay. I'm used to that. That's part of the concept here.
Yeah.
Organizing an unseminar is feeling awkward. So yeah, I've been there.
That's so true. Okay, guys, this is nearly 1 hour 52 minutes, so I think we should wrap up. And it was really great having you here, Natasha. It was awesome that you took the time. It's I think an hour later in Cape Town, so thank you for being up so late for us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been great to get to know everyone better. And Aidan, I actually never knew how you started the whole Happy Things, so this is brilliant.
Nice.
So everybody learns.
Oh, and I'm just gonna, I mean, this was kind of turning into a bit of a love in here, but just for that. Advertise the awesomeness of the people out in Cape Town. That was like that was one of my most spectacular trips I've ever had. There's a really burgeoning, exciting, extremely friendly, dynamic, and just generally very pleasant to interact with community out there. And yay.
And anyone is welcome.
That is so true. Like I had
we
no
see
idea.
This invitation.
I am completely inviting you.
It is awesome. I it was my first trip to sub-Saharan Africa, and I fell in love with the place. It's like whenever I hear something on the news about South Africa, I'm like, oh, South Africa, how wonderful. The people are so awesome. Anyway, so yeah, top people.
Great. Matthias, you're so quiet today.
No, it's fine. I'm enjoying listening.
You're enjoying
actually.
It.
My cat, just to end, my cat is wrapped up in the shape of a noodle with his tail covering his nose. Aww. Isn't that cute?
By the way, you really have to send a photo, because we usually...
I will, definitely. Yeah,
hopefully, good, excellent. Because we really need this, then we have very catty episode this time. Awesome. So once again, thank you very much. Thanks to the audience listening to so long to this podcast, if you end up here now. And as said, this is our first English one, so Matthias and me will be quite... happy for feedback, and we're looking forward to future episodes in German or in English, and we will continue. So stay tuned.
Can I just end by saying, first of all, thank you hugely to all the awesome people that I've worked with on all of these different projects before. And I'm sometimes the one with the biggest mouth, and so I get to do most of the talking, but just hugely indebted to all of them. And well done, Matthias and Konrad, for doing this in not your native language. I did the previous podcast in not my native language, and sometimes I forget that doing that is really stressful. So guys, well done. Thanks. Awesome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Okay, bye.
Yes.